I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation, and today, creative spaces. Today we begin the first in what will become an ongoing series of explorations into Atlanta's creative spaces, both conspicuous and hidden, obvious and not. While you could say that all spaces are in a sense creative, in that someone designed them, furnished them, decorated them, the spaces that we're looking at today are unique in that they are meant not only to personify and display the creative intent of the designers, but they're expected to do something more. They are expected to create creativity. And that's what we'll be looking at today. What does it mean to design not just from a place of creativity, but for a place of creativity?
There's a real difference between style and design. You know, some people have labeled design as the elimination of anything that's unnecessary. I don't necessarily believe that because I think good design also kind of stirs the soul a little bit. There's something inanimate to it that gives it a spirit, whether that's the place itself, something in the space, the way that the people use it. There's a lot of things that can bring that to life, but the goal of good design is to allow that to happen.
We try to figure out what that group or that person or that brand, what is their story? And then we try to create from their story where they're going to be their best, their most creative, where they're going to feel more comfortable, the best spaces to who they are, not try to fit them into who we think they should be.
Just a beautiful building. They're love affairs. When I do restaurants, they're very intense. They're very demanding. And they're hard. It's falling in the back wall had fallen in it, and we just don't want to throw a dining room in and put out food. We really want to respect what we've done and leave something of lasting value. And that was, first of all, a love of restoration, because there aren't many buildings like that. And there's a sense of responsibility, I think, is part of the fabric of the city. And
the developer was going to tear it down.
Everybody should do their part where they can, and I think it's not why we do it, but while we're doing it, which is we're in the restaurant business. But let's do it well, and let's keep all those other things in mind.
That's what the struggle is. How do you keep as much of the old so that you can read it as a historic place? And it feels like a historic place. It feels like something that's special, something that's unique, but it needs to meet your current needs.
But that's what design is all about. It's synthesizing those problems and coming up with the solution that elevates, you know, not only the spirit and sort of that passion while you're in the space, but also solves problems and makes that organization or those people more successful while they're in that space.
Today's guests are Bruce McAvoy. He's the lead designer and chairman of the board at the Museum of Design Atlanta and an associate principal with Perkins and Will.
I think design really does have that power. It changes people. It changes the way people behave. It changes the way organizations operate.
Bob Amick, leader of Concentrix Restaurants, who's brought us such fabulous spots as One Midtown Kitchen, Two Urban Licks, Tap, Parish, and Murphy's, to name a few.
You know, I think space is critical. And people ask me, I get hired to do a lot of stuff all over the country now and design restaurants and develop restaurants. And people ask me, well, what are you? And I'm not an architect and I'm not a designer. And I really use the word, I'm a space guy.
Leslie Sharp is a historian and assistant dean with Georgia Tech's College of Architecture.
I really start with the basics. I start with, first of all, what's the difference between really a new building and an old building? What are these character-defining features that make a building special? Sense of place, sense of historicism, a feeling and association. When you walk into a building, would it be a building that the original builder, architect, would recognize? Why is that so?
And Allison Heyer, head of Heyer Creative, an interior design firm, who worked with the Grammy Award-winning Zac Brown Band to turn a 30,000-square-foot bland warehouse into an unbelievable creative space and headquarters for the group.
Anytime somebody walks into an office, a home, a building, even when they meet somebody else, they give them 30 seconds. In 30 seconds, you have in your mind what you think that person, that space is going to deliver. So within 30 seconds, I want to put something into a space, an area, or develop a piece of art that leads you to an opinion of that person, that brand.
So we live out an hour then, travel all across his land, me and you.
You listen to Sidewalk Radio with your host, Gene Kansas. Today, Atlanta's creative spaces.
Somewhere down on the sand, just me and you.
First up today in our tour of Atlanta's creative spaces, the new Museum of Design Atlanta.
The Southeast's only design museum.
It'd be hard to imagine a more unusual location for a museum of design than a parking deck, but that's exactly where Moda has moved in, at 1315 Peachtree, in a former but now transformed concrete parking garage. And it's an obvious design challenge.
Well, if you break down Moda really in that space to kind of address the notion of how do you design for design, the way we handled it was basically there was an existing building there. We kind of stripped that back to its bare bones. We acknowledged the original structure and what it was. Being that this used to be a parking deck, one thing we were worried about was the sectional height of the galleries. You really want a nice height in a gallery. It just becomes more flexible. It feels good. And it also works well for most exhibits. And the way we achieved that now was to basically make individual ceilings, or what we're calling clouds, and run all the infrastructure of the museum along horizontally, hidden in a wall, and then basically turn all that infrastructure over the top of these clouds and put them almost as close as we could to the slab above. Then there was an effort to basically capture the identity of Moda and as it is and register it in the space as an organization, with some brand pieces and sort of some exercises so that people understand who's bringing this to Atlanta and who's bringing this and contributing to the culture of Atlanta. And then there was sort of a third component, which was this ribbon that floats through the space. And that ribbon is really a blank canvas. So the display walls in Moda, unlike some of the other walls and sort of the express structure, the existing concrete floor and the existing concrete beams, we floated this wall, you know, this 8-foot wall that's basically a foot off the ground, and it runs for 8 feet, just slipping underneath the existing beams, is kind of similar to the process of design. It's sort of this ribbon. It's this thread and this idea that's universal, and at the same time, it's everywhere. It's the process of design, and it's what we were trying to do with the space, and it was a little way to kind of tell stories and create a neutral backdrop, basically, so that as curators come in over the life of this institution, there's kind of that's the place of discussion, and it's held kind of in this delicate manner, and it's universal to who we are as people.
Perhaps with a sense of irony to its parking deck provenance, perhaps with a sense of that playfulness that seems to motivate all designers, and no doubt partly from sheer serendipity, Moda's first exhibition is titled Passione Italiana, Design of the Italian Motorcycle. But some of the upcoming shows express not only the range and variety of modern design, but the flexibility of the space itself.
We've been talking to some people recently, which I think could be a fascinating show, about gaming. The whole notion of the digital world and gaming, which seems to be ever-present in our culture these days, I don't think, at least personally, I haven't seen any serious discussion on what that might be. Another future show we're going to have is dedicated to sort of the history of the bathroom and the notion of the water dream, this sort of ritual we're all part of, but culturally and looking at it from a perspective through history is kind of a fascinating thing of how important what water plays in our life and what that means to us as a culture. And then we also have a great show coming down the road that is really about this fantastic dressmaking that happens all in paper and the notion of what you can do with paper and the sort of temporal nature of paper, but at the same time, you can create these amazing things. That's what's great about having sort of that neutral space is no matter what comes to the museum and no matter what, you know, a curator can think of, when it comes to the museum, it creates this rich dialogue and it can be a venue or a cultural destination for Atlanta that basically contributes to this level and this expectation of design. We have this emerging cultural district or this established cultural district in Atlanta, and Moda is going to become part of that, which is only another draw and another destination that's convenient not only for people that travel and the people that live here in Atlanta, but also the children you see that are bussed in and can be part of the shows at the High, and hopefully now at Moda as well. We can have a great discussion and hopefully focus on some of the stuff that they're probably not getting enough of in school these days.
Now listen to me, children. I take some good advice. I'm going to tell you something now. Don't make me say it twice. You can put away your lessons, throw away your books, 'cause I'm going to tell you what cooks.
Venus was a woman who had a lot of charms, but she got so much hug and she wore out both her arms. But you don't learn that in school. You don't learn that in school. There ain't no doubt about it. You don't learn that in school.
You can find creativity almost anywhere in Atlanta, including remote industrial areas and vacant warehouses.
Actually, I really kind of loved the space from the first time I saw it. It felt like it had a story.
And that's exactly where you'll find the new corporate headquarters for the Zach Brown Band. Designed by our guest, Allison Heyer, interior designer with Heyer Creative.
Knowing how the space could lay out and how we could more or less take those things and brand him, in a sense, into the space, whether it be finishes, raw woods and metals and kind of unfinished rough edges, but then honing it with some very clean, slick, simple, easy to get elements that also kind of made a statement about him and the music that he was producing.
You know, well, I'm a chicken fried, a cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and a radio.
To me, the South is really kind of redefining America's heartland to a great extent. So if you took that in words, and use that, how would you transport it into architecture? How would you transport it into design? How would you transport it into art and furniture? And so to me, that's what Zach's music is. It's not, you know, some people may use the word crossover. Some people may use, country with, a new feel. Well, to me, it's Southern urbanism. It's talking about things and values and a lot of to do in the South, but it's doing it in maybe a new and slightly different way.
Allison took this unique creative challenge of working with an artist to help bring to reality his own image in a space.
The entire space, while there's about 7,000 square feet that is office space, it also encapsulates a lot of the things that they do beyond their music, which is a printing group where they print all the t-shirts part of the time that they go to shows, and they also sell those online. Those are actually printed there on in the facility. Southern Grind, which makes and manufactures really quite beautiful knives. I know it sounds maybe a little odd, especially a woman saying, oh, that's a beautiful knife, but they really are pieces of art, and they literally do forge manufacture them there, as well as their leather shop where they manufacture different things that they use both at the shows, but also that they're selling online as far as leather. So it really encompasses three different small companies within the space, as well as their offices, and what we then kind of domed is their living room, where they just kind of kick back, relax, and watch TV, perform. We've got a great wet bar. We have a conference table. We even have a room specifically for the kids. It looks like their tour bus in the sense that it has 9 beds that are in there, as built like a tour bus would be. The kids have places to play, relax. It's, again, one of those things that's important to Zach is family, and a lot of the band members have children, so we wanted to make sure that there was a special place for them when they're at the facility. But overall, our goal was to make people comfortable being there. The kitchen space, which is both a test kitchen where he can do work from creating new sauces and new spices to the work that he's doing with autism and children and foods that are going to hopefully help that. But it also kind of gave you that sense of where does everybody go to when they're at a party, or where do you end up at your house most of the time? Everybody kind of ends up in the kitchen. So we created this great kind of dining room / kitchen area that, again, kind of gives you that feeling of being home. We were very conscious to make sure that this was as much of a working home as it was an office.
I ride east every other Friday. If I had it my way, they would not be wasted on this
auto body shop was not my idea, although I will say it's kind of interesting because a lot of the things that they have in the auto body shop actually fit with the style of the building. It's not brand new cars. It's cars that, again, have kind of had a long life, may have been abused, and they've kind of brought back to life and have a little vintage and heritage about them. A couple of the last that I knew they were working on was a Mustang. And I think it's twofold. I think, one, it's that creative piece of taking something and putting it back together, taking it apart, putting it back together, making it even better than it was, is interesting to him. But then, two, I just think it keeps all of the people involved. When you're working on a project like that together, it's different than, you know, one person or maybe two people write a song. And although the band sings it, it's still one or two people that are being creative. In this sense, it's allowing his team to work together as a team to do something, and you have a visual piece that when you're done, that in this case you can drive. But I think that's something, again, for him, that he enjoys putting people together on projects. He wanted his space not to be necessarily about him or about what he'd accomplished, more about, I think, the things that they can accomplish and do and be a family with. So nothing in the space. You don't see awards on walls. You don't see in the offices really anything that would tell you that they were where they are today in country music. It's more about, I think, him creating and a creative type space and something that's comfortable versus something that is showing people this is how great we've become.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio with your host, Gene Kansas, brought to you by Perkins & Will. Today, Atlanta's Creative Spaces. Next up on our tour of Creative Spaces in Atlanta, a place where creativity is not only seen but taught, Georgia Tech's newest crown jewel, the Hinman Research Facility.
The Hinman Building was the first research building at Georgia Tech, and it was opened in 1939. It was designed by Paul M. Heffernan, who was the former director of the architecture program at Georgia Tech, and it opened for really intensive research in terms of an experiment station. They've researched all kinds of laser-related stuff, remote sensing, lots of military applications in the building, an auto gyro, where they actually had, you know, what we would consider a helicopter in the building. In that building, it was very different. There was a battle over its construction because Heffernan wanted to design it in modern, but all the other buildings on Georgia Tech's campus had been designed in this Jacobean Gothic or collegiate Gothic style, if you go to the hill and you look at some of those older buildings at Georgia Tech. And so there was this battle over, should it be modern or should it look like everything else? And what Georgia Tech decided, they made a conscious decision. This is going to be a building that houses cutting-edge research. We need a new design aesthetic.
Before even walking into the front door,
out on top of the main entrance, right on top of the flat awning,
there's a sign out that says research.
And they just simply spelled out research.
That sign had been lost for decades and recently replaced with a special emphasis on the ARCH, the end, symbolizing architecture. This is a building of the College of Architecture. It's recently been reimagined, designed, I think, in a lot of ways to play off of a trend that's happening at Georgia Tech and other colleges and universities around the country of the cross-discipline nature of education. So while in the 1940s and 50s, Hinman may have only been used by industrial designers to create lasers for the military, now you walk in and you might find an engineer along with an architecture student, along with a music student who's talking to a technology student, and they're all working together to think and create.
And it's just the synergy there is really awesome. When you said interdisciplinary, that's what all of this is about. And just capturing it in one building is fabulous.
When you walk in, it's just, it opens up completely. It's
three stories.
Very, very high ceilings.
So when you're on the ground,
very,
it
very
seems
high
a
ceilings,
long way up.
Beautiful
and we have
lighting,
lights
natural
that are suspended
and,
from the ceiling.
And installed.
And so it gives and you this wonderful open space.
Then you can see across the ceiling these tracks for this just tremendous crane.
The crane had to stay in place the way it was built integrated to the building. So it had to stay in place. So the architects wanted to figure out what they could do with it to make it a functioning part of the space.
A crane that used to move and hold in place large pieces of machinery now holds what Georgia Tech calls the cradle. And the cradle really looks like as if Spider-Man could shoot out webs of metal and has caught in them a bridge, and now it's permanently suspended as a focal point to the space.
You really do think when you walk in that there's something special and this place is going to make me do better work. And it's that whole atmosphere of we're in this historic building that had all these other great inventions going on and all this, these innovative thoughts. I am now a part of that. When I bring my work here, I am now a part of this great history.
Lastly, we turn our attention to restaurants and our host this evening, creative mastermind and owner of Concentric Restaurants, Bob Amick, whose talent for taste is not only in the spaces he creates, but in the places they help define.
You know, I've been in the restaurant business in Atlanta for over 40 years, so I've done a lot of restaurants, and not only in Atlanta, but a lot of other places as well. But about 8.5 years ago, we started with One Midtown Kitchen. And I had run a public company and been all over the United States doing restaurants. And watching Atlanta grow up and had gone to New York and San Francisco and all the places and kept coming back to Atlanta and saying, well, why can't we have that here? Why don't we have some of these cool out-of-the-way places? And I've lived in Ansley Park since the mid-70s, so a long time. One Midtown Kitchen was a street that I'd never been down, literally less than a mile from my house, because it was a dead-end street that had all the cruising signs, don't cruise on this street. It was a pretty seedy area, with the exception that it was a street full of recording studios. Elton John used to record down there. And it was recording studios. It got into the tech industry a little bit, but it was a street in transition. And it's all about, you know, location, location, and location, but you don't always need the visibility, but you need the density and the surroundings in a way to make it interesting. When I first went down there to look at this building, because a friend of mine who's in real estate took me down, I said, I don't want to go in that thing. It's just awful, you know. And he kept pushing and pushing, and I finally one day I said, we'll go in. When I finally went in that building and realized what it was like, wow.
What was it when you walked in?
It was a photography studio.
Okay.
That actually had a little live loft upstairs, and it was also a framing shop. The wife did framing. It was a really odd combination, but it just was a great space. And the beauty of it is, you walk out the back and look out the back door, and you have these incredible views of the backside of Piedmont Park and the skyline, and go, that's pretty incredible. It's not anything anybody's gonna expect. And me, who's lived in the neighborhood for 40 years, didn't even expect to get that view when I walked out there. And literally, you know, within a day or so, we sort of had it figured out from a space standpoint in terms of how do we take a boxy building and make it flow and make it interesting. It was a big enough space to be a room. I don't like cut up spaces, so I don't like lots of little rooms. I like the drama of seeing and being seen, looking for something that you know, great brick on the wall or great beams in a ceiling or great height windows.
I'm a lighting that.
Great light. I'm a big believer if you have four walls and your choice is furniture, art, or lighting, what would you choose? Choose lighting first before furniture and art. You have right lighting, you have great space even if it's empty. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it, but you're looking for attributes. And once you figure out the attributes, it's all about playing to what the building gives you. And I think that that's what I've done in most of the restaurants, particularly in the older buildings, is take what the space gives you. Don't try to change it. Try to figure out what's great about the space and play on that. Usually, I don't come up with concepts first. I find great spaces and then figure out what to do with them because the spaces are great. And that way you get better compatibility between concept and space. The big challenge at One was it was a seedy street. And I was concerned that everybody needed to know we were a restaurant. So hence the kitchen is at the front door. Very, very different than most restaurants where you usually walk in and you're close to the bar. The kitchen's in the back or the side. We stuck the kitchen right at the front door and named the restaurant Midtown Kitchen, because even some of the early reviews, people said they pulled up and they thought they were in a dirty bookstore. So I guess it's the purple wall. People go out. It's a social thing, and people like to go out and see and be seen and talk to people and comment. And so that energy comes from all that. And so to have a space where you can put a kitchen, a bar, and a dining room all together in one room, without it all being blockaded off and separate, just gives it great, great vibe. Most people, when they leave a restaurant, if they've had a great experience in totally food, design, everything, they don't necessarily know what it is that they like. They just know that they had a great time. And I think that the restaurant business is subtle reinforcement of who you are at every step of the way, and whether that's the level of service or the price point or the quality of the food or how noisy it is or isn't, how comfortable it is or isn't, how formal it is or isn't. Everybody has, and all restaurants are different. You know, restaurants, food business is the entertainment business now. I don't care what people say. Critics hate to hear that. They, you know, it's the foodie business, and that's not what's important. What's important is making people comfortable and putting them at ease. And at the end of the day, you know you're successful by how many people come back.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Bob Amick, the creative force at Concentrics Restaurants, Allison Heyer, an interior designer, the Grammy Award-winning Zach Brown Band, Leslie Sharp, a historian and assistant dean at Georgia Tech's College of Architecture, and Bruce McAvoy, chairman of the board, NOTA. Thanks for listening to Sidewalk Radio, brought to you by Perkins & Will. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. We'll see you next month.